Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. My Nono died the year I was born. I knew him only through stories, but he loomed larger than life in our family. Years before, he and my Nona had run The Tap Room, which was a neighborhood bar in Three Rivers, Michigan. I learned who my Nono was and why he was a good man through stories about that bar. The tenderness with which he greeted lost souls, the forbearance when regulars had a bad day and acted like it, the quiet greeting for the morning drinkers in after a long night shift of work. It was a messy but close community at the Tap Room, and my Nono set its character. So ultimately, that is what a neighborhood bar means to me: community, connection, belonging. Now, miraculously, the Tap Room is still there. In my own neighborhood, though, only one or two of those bars have survived. The rest have closed and turned into upscale eateries. It's a trend we're seeing all over Boston. Brighton's Greenbrier in May, Roxbury's Sunny Walkers, and Cambridge's Paradise both last year, among many others. So what is lost when a neighborhood bar closes? That's the question at the heart of Gabriel O'Malley's recent reflection in Boston Magazine. O'Malley is the co-owner of the Plow and Stars in Cambridge and joins us now in Studio 3. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we want to invite you in. What do you have a neighborhood bar? What does it mean to you? Why do you love it? What role does it play in your life? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Okay, Gabriel, in your piece for Boston Magazine, which was called The Death of the Neighborhood Bar, you base your story with this very real character, a human named Richard, who was at the Plow. What happened to him?
Well, Richard came to the Plow almost 40 years ago. He was born and raised in South Carolina and moved to Cambridge around 1980 to study at the Divinity School at Harvard. And as he told it, one day he was walking down Massachusetts Avenue, he popped his head into the Plow, and the rest was history. He became a fixture at the bar. Ownership changed over time, management changed, staff changed, even the wall art changed, patrons changed, but Richard was a true fixture there, in part because of his religiosity. He was just always a deeply warm spirit and a soul. And so when he passed away a couple of years ago, it was a real shock to the Plow community and the greater Cambridge community.
For listeners who may not have been there, can you describe the Plow? What's it like?
Well, the Plow has been around for 50 years as of this year. It is on the corner of Hancock and Mass Ave, right between Central and Harvard Square, and it is one room. We have my father and uncle helped open the bar in the late 1960s after they both came to study in America from Ireland. And it's always been a place of a community, a place for musicians to come and play their music. My father started a literary magazine, Plowshares, there, so it's been a place for writers. But more than anything, it's been a place for those who live near the Plow to come in, have a chat and a laugh with their friends.
In your view, are these cheer styles places? You know, I keep thinking, Norm, you know, everyone knows your name. Are they going extinct?
Well, one of the reasons why I wrote the piece is that there are a number of studies that show that across not only America, but Ireland and Britain, neighborhood bars are disappearing at an astonishing rate. You mentioned a couple of iconic Boston area bars that have just closed. And so there certainly is a trend in that direction. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to reflect on the role of the neighborhood bar in modern day America right now.
We have another bar owner here in the studio who I want to bring in, but before I do, quickly, as we expected, a lot of people want to talk about this. So let's just take a couple calls. 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK is the number. Rama from Gloucester, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I just want to acknowledge Sully's. Your writers may know we lost a bright, bright, bright light in Ricky Sullivan. He owned Sully's. His father owned it before him in my hometown of Marlborough, Massachusetts. It was there 50 or so years. It did end up closing about 8-10 years ago, and Ricky Sullivan was the bright, bright light, let's say the Woody from, you know, the Cheers show. for all of us in Marlboro and the surrounding communities, and it was a big, big loss. He died in a tragic car accident, as it happens, about 2 weeks ago. And the wake for his funeral, the wake was, I'm kind of having a hard time because I'm tearing up here, but
sure.
The wake was about a half a mile long, the number of people there to honor Ricky Sullivan, who was the anchor of this great community bar. And I just had a thought as I'm listening to your guests. I'd love for these community bars to somehow hang on. Do they somehow need to evolve into more than just the bars, more than just a drinking or eating place? Do they need to evolve into more of a, say, a literary place, a conversational place, a place of a little bit more
Rama,
different, divergent activities?
Rama, thanks so much for that. First, I'm sorry for the loss of your friend. I really am. And I love the call. It's a great opportunity to turn to Nia Grace, who is the owner and general manager of Daryl's Corner Bar and Kitchen in the South End, Roxbury. Nia, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
You were nodding all the way through Rama's call. So let me just invite you to react.
Yeah. I think I totally agree. It's a matter of evolution. And so I think that some of our bars who have been around, like the Plow and Stars for 50 years, it's because we have been able to kind of change with the tide. And so I think Nielsen talks about regular bars, being in a neighborhood bar, being a place where you can come. There's no theme. There's no dress code. And you just feel comfortable. And I think in that, where it's true, there's also a portion where you've got to kind of think about, well, what's going to bring them in? Both Gabriel and I were talking about live music. We both do live music, and we wonder, is that something that really brings them in, or sometimes does it kind of take away from it? But we know that for our customer base that it's bringing them in, and we're kind of evolving with the needs of the community, too.
So, Nia, how do you balance between remaining a familiar touchstone for the neighborhood while innovating and changing in ways to stay fresh?
Well, particularly for us, we have, like I said, live entertainment as well as Southern style food. And with that, we used to be a straight ahead diner called Bob the Chef's. And throughout the years, over about 60 years, we've been able to kind of keep with that history of Southern comfort style food. We even have items that are named for Bob on our current menu at Daryl's. And so that familiarity alone, where someone is able to come and get that familiar meal that might have reminded them of a particular time and place in the city is what is endearing, and it keeps them coming back.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. If you want to join the conversation, which Jay from Scituate does. So, Jay, come on in. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to lead by saying you're making me nostalgic. I love Bob the Chef's.
Great.
And so hearing that name has just made me happy. But
that's awesome, Jay.
I've been thinking about the disappearing local bars, and it's tragic, and it's happening. But I've noticed, at least here on the South Shore, every town seems to be cropping up with their own microbrewery, and I feel like the tap rooms there could sort of substitute or become community, or de facto community centers around which the communities can build.
Thanks. Thanks for that, Jay. It's a really interesting thought. I want to add one more call, and then I want to turn to Gabriel on both of these. Janet from Cambridge, go ahead.
Hi. I want to give a shout out to Zimmy's, a roadhouse in Union, Michigan.
Union, Michigan.
Yeah. I know the tap room.
Awesome.
It's a great place.
Awesome.
You got my attention there. Zimmy's became its own town, incorporated community. It was a roadhouse that four generations of my family played the concertina at. People gathered for live music. It was in the middle of nowhere, and it anchored a whole area. It became a town by dint of its ability to draw people.
I feel like I can almost kind of hear the sounds and smell the bar. Gabriel, there is this need for community and to stave off loneliness that bars, well, you talk about it. You wrote about it beautifully. Let me just hand it to you.
Well, the first caller who mentioned Sully's, reminded me of Richard in the Plow. When Richard passed away, there was a service for him in Central Square, not too far down the road from the Plow, and hundreds of people showed up. It was one of those services where the pastor came to those who were supposed to speak and said, you know, can you limit your comments to 2 minutes because we got to get through this? And she meant it because she was the MC. And of course, everybody ignored that instruction because they had so many colorful words to use to describe Richard. And Richard's family came up from South Carolina and was there. And as I sat back and reflected on the room and the atmosphere, it was very powerful to see them come hundreds of miles up to see Richard's adopted family in the city of Cambridge and specifically the Plough. So, you know, bars are certainly a place of community when done right. Doesn't mean they're the only place. There are many other third places, as they're called, outside of, you know, home and work that can be a source of community. But sociologists have generally said there are three conditions that are necessary for people to make friends: proximity, repeated, unplanned interactions, and a situation where people feel comfortable letting their guard down and confiding with folks. And that's what Nia's Place, The Plough, other great neighborhood bars offer to folks, right? You have a little bit of a splash, maybe a drink, and you sit down and you meet an old friend or a new friend, and you have a chat and a conversation, a real connection.
1-800-423-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. Nia, what do you say if there's someone out there listening who says, okay, you know, I understand the appeal, but the people in the bar are not my family. And at the same time, the people who are there all the time may be struggling with alcoholism. This may not be a healthy way to find connection. Hmm. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I would probably beg to differ if we talk about the people who are there are not your family. We actually care about every guest that walks through. For us particularly, and I'm probably sure at the Plough, we took pride in knowing someone's name, knowing what, you know, where someone worked, you know, what they might be doing throughout their day. And we do treat you like family. So even if it's just your first and only visit, we love visitors who come into town. We get people from out of town, out of the country often. And we want them to feel like family, whether it's for 90 minutes, 2 hours, for the evening. You know, that's like kind of our goal. So that's the first thing.
Why is that a source of pride for you? Is that about traditions of hospitality? I mean, where does that come from?
I think it's traditions of hospitality, but also of culture. I think when we think about true neighborhood feelings, you could go to your, you know, just your neighbor's house, be it next door sometimes, and have a meal and feel like you're at home. And, you know, they're going to make sure that they take care of you like they're your own or like you're, you know, part of the family, and then send you home safely. And that's kind of the same thing that we're doing here. That's where you feel most comfortable, where that if you are struggling with something, even be it addiction, you're able to kind of let that down and let someone in enough for us to kind of reach you.
You were nodding, Gabriel, to that.
Well, yeah, I think your question is a fair one. As a bar owner, you have to recognize the dark side of bars. That's just the truth, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to write the article and reflect on the current state of neighborhood bars. But for certain people, it does offer a real place of community. And I personally, just as a cultural and personal matter, love bars, so I'm always going to be partial to them. But I understand that they're not for everyone, and that some people really would prefer to socialize elsewhere.
Let's take some more calls. Ashley from Ashland. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, just talking about the sense of community. One thing, I'm from the North Shore. And, you know, I moved out 45 minutes west now, and a local bar closed, and we lost the place to just show up, you know, hearkening back to times where you didn't have to text and, you know, track my friends and see where everyone is. You could just show up and run into someone that you know and be able to enjoy it that way and kind of just have a night where you don't know where it's going to go, instead of everything being so planned and, you know, methodical.
So kind of unexpected and yet reliable at the same time, Ashley. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Thanks for calling. Let's talk to Denise from Jamaica Plain, too. Denise, go ahead.
Well, I'm interested and concerned about being at Darrell's because it is a cultural icon. I used to go down there when it was Bob the Chef. It was a neighborhood place. Everybody came in. Hey, Bob, how you doing? We had great breakfasts there. And it was just a sense of family. This man came from down south, and he came up to Boston, established himself, and he stayed there for 40, maybe more years. I like the fact that Darrell's has taken over because in addition to the atmosphere of family and culture, we're getting the musicians that come in from Berkeley and those local songwriters or singers who come in and frequent the place and give you a homey atmosphere. And I want to say something about addiction. I am a recovering addict, and I have been clean for 30 years. And I used to go down to the bars, Sugar Shack, et cetera, and I used to drink. I don't drink anymore, but I still find when I go into Darrow's that the atmosphere does not require me to drink.
That's fabulous.
It gives me a homey feeling where I can just sit and be comfortable and not have to have a drink to enjoy myself.
That's fabulous, Denise. And I'm going to give Nia a chance to respond to you, but we have one more caller who wants to share some experiences from the Plow. So let me hear from Christian from Dennisport, too, and then I'll give both of our guests an opportunity to respond. Christian, go ahead.
Hey, Gabriel, I just want to say I really love the Plow. It's been years since I've been there, but a cool thing is that whenever I return, the bartender always remembers who I am and what I drink, and I always meet great people there. And a musical event originally brought me into the Plow. And as far as community at a bar, it's not something you could create. I've seen bars try to create an atmosphere, try to foster community, and it's just a mysterious synergy that just kind of happens or it doesn't, you know. And so those places like that that foster that type of energy and they are dying out, especially in places like New York City and, you know, where places can't, you know, keep up with the rent and
Thanks.
Stuff. But
thanks for that call, Christian. And so I want to give both of our guests an opportunity to respond. Nia, why don't you respond to Denise and her call?
Thank you, Denise, for the call. Thank you for your patronage. I think that to her point, you do not have to have a drink in order to have a good time. And I think that that's the kind of environment that we're trying to create. And I think to that last caller, it has to be authentic. It has to come from, you know, the source. It has to come from the people that are around you as well. And I thank Denise for making that call.
And Gabriel, how about you with Christian?
Well, Christian, it was wonderful to hear from you, and I'm happy that every time you show up at the Plow, you feel welcome. I think, as you said, there's some strange alchemy, and it's hard to figure out how to create a place of community. But more than anything, it's about the people who work there and the patrons who come in. And if they're warm and friendly, then that creates an atmosphere that attracts others.
So we've been talking for a while now, and from the two of you and from the callers, we're having a conversation about something really special, really particular, and that's important in people's lives. So why are they closing? I mean, part of the framing of this whole conversation is that we're losing these bars. If they're this special, Nia, why are they closing?
I think I made a note about us just being overshadowed by a lot of the things and the developments that are happening maybe on the seaport or on different rooftops. And it's not that the neighborhood bar is losing any more importance or any more of a place, but with the diversity in terms of where we can hang out and spend our dollar, that's what's really changing. At the end of the day, you know, we're still a part of the fabric, but we're still a business. And so if we're not actually getting the numbers for the business, that's what's kind of making us lose our way. But like I think I said, again, it's just a matter of we're just kind of being overshadowed sometimes by this industry, you know, the hot new place, what's next. But I mean, the ones that are allowed to or who are here today, I would say 20 years, 50 years into the industry, we're doing something right. To Gabriel's point, we've got to be doing something right.
What do you think, Gabriel?
Well, people are drinking less now than they have at any point in recent history, and so that's definitely a factor.
Is that about health or just other alternatives, or what do you think that's about?
Well, I think it's in part about other alternatives. People, I think, generally are trying to live a quote-unquote healthier lifestyle now, and that's a good thing for the most part, right? I think also we're more connected now than ever, and it's very easy to go on to Netflix or Amazon Prime and see something witty, brilliant, moving. And the chances are that you could just do that instead of go to a random place and meet a random person who's more interesting, right? And so the easy default is to go look at your computer or look at your tablet. And so I think a lot of people are doing that. And there's a benefit to that, obviously, but it can come at a great cost to community.
So we were talking as we were preparing for today about the fact that there used to be this kind of neighborhood bar that was really heavily rooted in identity. Maybe it was an Irish bar, it was an African-American bar, it was a gay bar, whatever that bar was. And when you went there, you didn't have to do any code switching. You didn't have to put on any airs. You could just fully be who you are. Today, you can... We have such a diverse community, and people are welcome so many more places, and that's a good thing. But then the code switching still has to happen, that not quite being yourself or being a little different than you might be in your most intimate settings. So what is the trade-off there? Nia, I guess I'll start with you. What is the trade-off there, and how do we think about that?
In terms of trade-off, I would say in our establishment, there really isn't one. I think I spoke with the producers. We talked about the location of the bar itself, the restaurant and bar itself. It happens to be at such a diverse crossroad. It's positioned at Columbus Ave and Mass Ave. We have equally black and white guests who make their way there. And to me, I think it's just a place of everyone is, you know, very open and feels comfortable. I feel like there is no trade-off, you know, in particularly our establishment, because what we're offering up is something that is either germane to a lot of people. It's familiar. It's, you know, who doesn't like fried chicken? Who doesn't like, you know, live music or jazz and soul? And I think that that kind of makes us, that's that unifying mark for us, where as we may have been seen as a predominantly African-American bar, and that is our roots. We are just very open. So.
And Gabriel, the Plow, as I understand it, was historically an Irish bar, but Richard was a Southern African-American man, was he not?
Yes. I mean, there's a saying, there's no such thing as an Irish bar in Dublin. If you're truly comfortable in your identity, then it's not something you really need to trumpet, right? So the Plow has an Irish lineage, but we're a Cambridge bar and we're a neighborhood bar, right? And Richard is a perfect example of that. He came from a different part of the country and was welcomed in with open arms to the Plow. That's part as a result of the people who owned it and managed it and the community. But it's something that I think is important for all establishments. You know, I think one of the perceptions about neighborhood bars is that they're the place with the closed or the fogged up windows. And you're not quite sure what's going to happen if you open the door and you haven't been in there before. And places like that, you know, do struggle, I think, as times change. And so I think Nia and I have both really tried to make our places open and welcoming to everyone.
All right. So we're almost done. So in like 10 seconds from each of you, Nia, why do you own a bar?
I own a bar because, you know, I truly love the culture. I love the community. I love the smiles that we have on people's face, right?
And Gabriel, how about you? Why do you own a bar?
Well, for me, it's the family connection. The Plow has been in my family since before I was even born. And I was born and raised in Cambridge, where the Plow is. So it's an important piece of my own history and the history of the Cambridge community.
Gabriel O'Malley is the co-owner of the Plow and Stars in Cambridge. You can find a link to his Boston Magazine piece, Death of the Neighborhood Bar, on our website, radioboston.org. Gabriel, thanks.
Thank you.
And Nia Grace is the owner and general manager of Daryl's Corner Bar and Kitchen in Roxbury. Nia, thanks so much for coming to Radio Boston.
Thank you.